afternoon of Tisha B'Av, you know, it already becomes more lenient, and the night after Tisha B'Av is already with still some restrictions, and by the following day, the 10th of Av, noon of 10th of Av, all the restrictions are gone. So Rav Soloveitchik made the following observation. He said, basically, we have here the reverse image, the mirror parallel of Hilchot Avelut, of the Halachot of mourning. In mourning, we know that it culminates with the actual death and funeral. The first day where we rend our garments, we tear kriya, there's the funeral, which is the most intense day. We don't even do mitzvahs, we don't daven, we don't say brachas. Then we have, that's followed by the first 3 days of sitting Shiva, where people who are kind of in the outside circle don't come and visit, only more people on the inside. They're called the Shloshesh Yimei Bechi, the 3 days of crying. Then there's the rest of the Shiva, the 7 days, which are days for, you know, receiving consolation visits. Then there's the Shloshim, the 30 days. And in the event it's mourning for a parent, a father or a mother, there's the full 12 months, the Shtei Mesrei Chodesh, a full year of mourning. And Rav Soloveitchik observed that the laws of Tisha B'Av are the reverse. When somebody dies, lo aleinu, it goes from the most intense is the actual day of death to less intense to less intense. The day, the 3 days, the 7 days, the 30 days, the 12 days, all the time becoming less and less intense. Regarding Tisha B'Av and the destruction of the temple, we start reverse. He paralleled the halachot of the 3 weeks to the halachot of the Shtei Mesrei Chodesh, the 12 months of mourning. Then you have the 9 days, which are like the Shloshim, the 30 days. You have the halachot of Tisha B'Av, which are already like sitting Shiva. In the morning of Tisha B'Av, the most intense morning, morning with the U, that is already the day of the passing itself. And he pointed out that the role of these observations, these mourning and the halachot and the customs, have a reverse role. When somebody dies, lo aleinu, you don't need halachot to get you in the mood. You don't need someone to tell you don't engage in festive activities. It's natural. It's our human reaction. What the halachot of mourning and Shiva do are take you out of your mourning. They take you out of the grave that the mourner has dug for themselves, and little by little bring you back into the circle of life. They say, okay, during the Shiva, you have to sit on the floor, you can't leave your house. But on the seventh day, you have to leave your house. Okay, but you still have some kind of a framework of mourning for the first 30 days. And it kind of takes one the mourner by the hand, bringing them back little by little back into the circle of life. Whereas Tisha B'Av, we have the opposite problem. In Tisha B'Av, we're not in the mood. We don't understand what we're trying to remember or to mourn about. And so we actually do it the opposite way. First, we take like the Shnei Mesrei Chodesh, the 12 months, and then it gets more intense, little by little, taking us out of the regular cycle of our daily routine and bringing us into our high level of mindfulness and pain and mourning over the temple and our exile. So that's just a kind of a philosophic framework to understand what's happening with these halachas as we transition from the 3 weeks into the 9 days, and then to the Shavua Shachalbo, the week in which Tisha B'Av actually comes out. And into Tisha B'Av, we're getting deeper and deeper, more and more intensely into a consciousness of that morning. So each of these periods has its own distinct halachot, and it gets harder or more intense and more severe as we progress. Now, having said that, I would like to clarify, I think there's two misconceptions. I don't know if they're the most important halachot, but I think it gives us an idea of how these halachas work to clarify two misconceptions about the 3 weeks and the 9 days. One of them is connected to what we talked about last week. Last week, we talked about that during the 3 weeks, we saw this insight in the Shulchan Aruch, in the 3 weeks, one is advised to be cautious and refrain from reciting Shechiyanu. Don't say Shechiyanu, the bracha of Shechiyanu, which we recite on new fruit, on new clothes, on buying maybe a new car, a new dining room set, a new, I don't know, something nice. We saw that's a question and an issue, and what happens on Shabbos and what happens if it's a mitzvah. That halacha is often confused with a different halacha. Some people understand, this is the thing which is not true. Some people understand, oh, you shouldn't say Shechiyanu on new clothes. I know why, because you're not supposed to buy things during the 3 weeks. That's not true. There is no prohibition to buy new things or even nice things in the 3 weeks. There's no problem. Let's try to be very specific here, and as we say in Hebrew, ledayek, to pay careful attention. There's no prohibition and there's no issue of buying new things, of buying nice new things during the 3 weeks. When I say the 3 weeks, I mean up till the 9 days, up to Rosh Chodesh Av, up till Tuesday night. The problem was just saying the bracha. We had a problem with those words. We had a problem with the declaration that thank you God for bringing me to this time. I'm so happy I made it back to this time. This time, these 3 weeks have a fabric, have a consistency, the texture of this of these time. Is a negative time, and we don't want to be blessing the time. As I mentioned, the bracha of Shechiyanu in halacha is called the Birkat HaZman. It's blessing the time. This is not a blessed time. In other words, the problem is not the new car that you bought. The problem is that, oh, now I have to say a Shechiyanu. Okay? So, for example, why is this important? Most clothes we buy do not require Shechiyanu. You only say Shechiyanu when you buy something really, really nice and fancy. You know, the equivalent, I don't know, for a woman, but if it would be for a man, you know, we're in Israel now, people don't wear suits, but you know, if you would buy a new suit, if a man would buy a new suit or a nice dress, I don't just mean a regular dress, a nice dress, a dress like for a wedding or for a Yom Tif, a really nice, expensive dress that's like a wow, that you would say Shechiyanu. And the reason you shouldn't buy that during the 3 weeks is because, not because of the actual buying, but because of the Shechiyanu. That's what the 3 weeks mandate. Starting what Tuesday night, we don't buy new clothes. We don't buy anything new.
Uh-oh, you froze.
Perhaps he ran out to buy something new because it's getting close to the last 9 days.
Mm-hmm.
Reminded him.
I wonder if he knows that he's frozen, that we don't see any.
Well, Leah should notify him.
I don't see him up here.
No, he crashed.
Yeah.
His computer crashed? His phone?
Something, his Zoom.
There, he's talking, but I can't hear him. He's muted.
You can see him? I can't see him at all.
Okay, was I the only one who got lost there?
Yes.
Yes.
I just dropped out of, I don't know. Sorry about that. Anyway, one of these days, we're going to get rid of the Zoom. So anyway, where were we? Okay, so that's the 3 weeks. The 3 weeks, I'm just trying to show how there's sometimes misconceptions. There's no problem until Rosh Chodesh to buy new things. The problem, if there was a problem of Shechiyanu, of the actual reciting those words. So in cases where you buy new things, even nice things, even fancy things, but there wouldn't be a need to say Shechiyanu for any number of reasons. For example, if the dress needs alterations and you can't wear it when you buy it, so you only say the Shechiyanu later after it's ready, after Tisha B'Av. So when you buy it, you're allowed to buy it. There's no problem. But from Rosh Chodesh Av, from Tuesday night, there's already the, I don't want to say the noose is tightening, but the halachot are becoming more severe, and there's already a prohibition to buy new things, even if you're not going to wear it or use it. I'm not talking about food. I'm not talking about basic household items that you need. You need a new light bulb. You're allowed to buy a light bulb, but anything that has any kind of, let's say, added value or pleasure to it, one is to refrain from buying it, unless it's something that you absolutely need. And the clothes one doesn't buy, you're allowed to buy Tisha B'Av shoes, for example, if you want to buy Crocs or the like. It's best to buy them before, but you're allowed to buy them because they're necessary for the morning observance. But that's just one little difference that people don't pay attention to sometimes. Another example, I think you may have followed the news. There was such a big debate. Should we open the beaches or close the beaches? Open the swimming pools or close the swimming pools? I know it had nothing to do with the 3 weeks, but I think that there's a common conception. I know that my mother-in-law thinks this, that, you know, you shouldn't go swimming in the 3 weeks. And again, when I say 3 weeks, I mean until the Rosh Chodesh Av. And that's also not true. You're allowed to go to the beach, you're allowed to go to the swimming pool, you're allowed to bathe or whatever during the 3 weeks. The restrictions and the halachas that prohibit that are only from Rosh Chodesh. Now, what's the issue? The issue is, you know, as we talked about last week, I believe, Alana, did you point out about that paragraph that I skipped in the Shulchan Aruch, that there are demons and there's a dangerous time. We know the 3 weeks are not a fortuitous time. Right? They have that quote-unquote bad luck about them. So what the halacha does say is that during the 3 weeks, one should not do anything that is at all dangerous. A person should never do anything dangerous. A person should always, you know, follow the rules. But during the 3 weeks, there's this way of things that happen that you know, whatever. If something can go wrong, it often does during the 3 weeks, and that's why if there is an issue of bathing or swimming or beaches, it would. Oh, good question. Thank you. I'll get that in 1 second. You should be careful. You should be careful not to do anything that pushes the envelope in any way. In other words, if sometimes you allow yourself, I'm like against this always, but to go to a beach or a spot on the Kinneret that's not designated for bathing with the lifeguard. So if you're one of those kind of people who, you know, all right, you know, there's no real reason, it's not a big deal. In the 3 weeks, that would be a time to not do that and to be more cautious. But in terms of the actual technical bathing or swimming, that's only from the 9 days. Rochelle asked about flying in a plane. I know that there's, you know, it goes to the question of, like, you know, is flying, you know, if you're living 70 years ago, you know, flying in a plane, that had a certain bit of adventure, thrill, and perhaps danger involved into it. But technically, there's no problem flying in a plane, neither during the 3 weeks nor in the 9 days, because that's not considered a danger. Now, I'm not talking about the ventilation and the social distancing of COVID on a plane, but the very fly, if you're on a private jet, there's no problem doing so. If you're worried about COVID, you know, this would be a time probably the entire 3 weeks to be a little more cautious even than the Ministry of Health would tell you. Again, should you go crazy? No. Should you be obsessive? No. Should you, you know, if there's a very good reason to fly, you can fly. My wife went to America last year to give a class during the 9 days. She flew on Rosh Chodesh Av. I think she was even going to fly on Tisha B'Av, and it was permitted to fly on Tisha B'Av. In other words, in terms of the danger element, it's not considered a danger. Although you should know, if we already mentioned that, I'll open it up as a parenthesis, that you may be familiar with the practice of someone who flies when they arrive at the destination, that they recite Birkat HaGomel. Did you ever know that? Did you ever see that? Anyone? That if it's a man, when they're called up to the Torah, or a woman in the forum of 10 people, to recite Birkat HaGomel, wow, you saved me. You know, that was a great miracle. Like a woman after childbirth recites Birkat HaGomel, and the question is why? What's the? It's not like a big miracle. I was saved. So technically, in the Shulchan Aruch, maybe one day we'll talk about Birkat HaGomel. But technically, one of the four categories of people who recite Birkat HaGomel, the blessing of Thanksgiving, are people who crossed the sea. People who crossed the sea, And just by the way, as a parenthesis within parentheses, I know that the pilgrims, for those of you who are from North America, you know, I don't know today if you can even talk about the pilgrims. You know, it's not politically correct. They're like the bad guys now. But you know, in the old days, you know, when it was good to be from the Mayflower, they apparently, those Puritan pilgrims recited Psalm 107, which is a psalm of thanksgiving of crossing the sea, which is the course of our halacha for reciting Birkas Agoma when you cross the sea. I was once in Boston, like, which is like, you know, the capital of patriotism for Thanksgiving, and the rabbi in the synagogue said that. But anyway, coming back to our issue about the plane, the airplane, technically there's no danger. So what? That's like kind of like an anachronistic halacha. It's old-fashioned halacha. So Moshe Feinstein writes up beautifully. He says, no. It says, even a boat, even if you cross the ocean on a boat, there's nothing inherently dangerous about a boat. There's another category of those people who cross the desert. The desert's a dangerous place. If you go in the desert, you cross the desert, it's dangerous. A sea is not a dangerous place to cross inherently. To fly is not inherently dangerous, I promise you. However, the problem with the sea and parallel the sky is that in, like, as the stewardess always says, in the unlikely event that the cabin, you know, of a cabin depressurization and the mass will drop down, in the unlikely event, it could be one in a million. Who knows? I'm so far away. But if something does happen, even a small thing becomes a big thing because you're so far away or so far above the ability to get help. So that's the reason we say Birkas HaGomel. Not because it was actually dangerous, but if one of the rare things happen, even a small thing can become a big thing. So that's just a point about that. But there is no problem of flying during the 9 days, nor during the 3 weeks. So that's the second example. Now what I would like to do, I found something which I thought was such an interesting and intriguing halacha on so many levels. I wanted to share it with you. But you know, sometimes people don't want to come to a halacha class because, you know, oh no, what new chumrah am I going to have to follow now? What am I not doing right? I'm going to have to change something. So here it's funny because it's the reverse. Here, I want to show you a halacha, which I don't know anyone who practices it, even though black on white, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it seems that that is the halacha, at least for Ashkenazim. And the halacha is, what happens this Shabbos? This Shabbos has a special designation. It's called Shabbat Chazon. Shabbat Chazon takes its name from the first word of the Haftarah, of the passage from the prophets, which is read after the Torah reading on Shabbat morning, which is Chazon Yeshayahu, the vision of Yeshayahu the prophet, which is a vision of the destruction of Jerusalem, which is, of course, read appropriately the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. And the whole Shabbat takes its name from that word, that opening word. It's the Shabbat where we read Chazon. And the Shabbat basically becomes like the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. It almost has like a kind of a stamp of Tisha B'Av on it. And that's a very intriguing question. how can Shabbat and Tisha B'Av go together? I mean, I know we have times like last year, if you remember, Tisha B'Av was on Shabbat. The ninth day of Av was on Shabbat. And of course, what happened in that event? We don't fast. Shabbat trumps Tisha B'Av. Yom Kippur in Shabbat, Yom Kippur wins, and we fast on Shabbat. We never, besides for Yom Kippur, fast on Shabbat. So what about other aspects of mourning, of these halachot, of the restrictions of the 9 days, or even of Tisha B'Av on Shabbat? Do they go together? Now, first blush is no. They don't go together. As I just said, you eat on Tisha B'Av if Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbat. You can have a great, giant, big feast, you know, 20 minutes before you go to Eicha to read the Megillah of Lamentations. You could be sitting at a wonderfully giant steak dinner, as long as it's still Shabbat, I mean. Tisha B'Av and Shabbat, Shabbat wins. We know this also from sitting Shiva. By definition, as we observed earlier, there's a certain parallel between the laws of mourning a loved one and the laws of Tisha B'Av. And we know from there also that every time you sit Shiva, you got to be careful with your words. Every time somebody, lo aleinu, sits Shiva, by definition, Shiva means seven. There's always going to be a Shabbat within that week, right? So by definition, how does the Shiva incorporate Shabbat? And as you probably know, that Shabbat is Shabbat. And you don't sit Shiva. The mourner goes to Shul, wears Shabbat clothing, and pretty much conducts him or herself regularly. Interestingly, importantly, Shabbat counts as one of the seven. It doesn't break. It's not like, oh, there's a Shabbat, so you have to do another seven. Why is that? Because as the halakha states in Hebrew, dvarim shebatzina noheg, things which are hidden, are modest, things which aren't outwardly apparent, aspects of the observance of the Shiva, which no one can see. If you'd be wearing the torn garment, that's obvious. If someone would not go out of their house, that's obvious. That would be publicly mourning on Shabbat. But things which someone can't see, for example, fully washing the body, or other aspects of modesty which are not apparent outside, then those do apply on Shabbat. In other words, on Shabbat, there's like this two layers. There's the beneath the surface, there is a mourning, which Shabbat can hold. But anything outward, we never give outward expression to mourning on Shabbat. Now, what about Shabbat Chazon? So when I was a kid, we're going to get to the halach in 1 second, but there was a custom. I don't know if any of you have remember this, or maybe in Sfat there are places that do this. Certain places, I think mostly in Chutz La'aretz, Lechadodi, right? It's the happiest part of Kabbalat Shabbat. It's singing these days. It's dancing. So many, thousands of tunes probably to Lechadodi. What we used to do in our shul, we would say Lechadodi in the tune of Elitzion. Elitzion is one of the mournful keynotes, one of the mournful poems that we read on Tisha B'Av morning. And it has a special tune. It's at the end of all that long, long lamentations that we say in the morning. Elitzion v'yareho, da 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 na 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 na. Familiar to anyone? Well, that's how we would say Lechadodi. Lechadodi likras kala. And as you know, melodies evoke emotion. When you hear it, if I say to you, Yiskadal v'yiskadash shemei rabo. So you want to do tshuva, right? You want to repent. Right, the tune of, I'm not a chazan, but if a real chazan would say something, they would would sing the tune of a Kabbalah of the high holy days. What would happen? Yomim Noraim. You feel like you're Yomim Noraim on Shabbos in my shul and in many shuls. There was a custom to say Elitzion Ra'areha, to sing Kabbalah, to sing Lechadodi, and that would of course evoke a mournful Tisha B'Av atmosphere. As my father-in-law used to joke. My father-in-law, Shalom, apropos our new visitor here, a new participant. He would have a joke. How did it go? You know, when people were talking about something depressing or something, talk about something depressing or something sad or distressing. He was like, oh, let's not talk about such things. Let's talk about something happy. When's Tisha B'Av? So sometimes we can evoke Tisha B'Av, you know, even if it's not Tisha B'Av. So that was a custom. This Shabbos has a certain atmosphere of Tisha B'Av to it. Now, I looked it up. When I came to Tzfat, I missed it. I loved it. It was haunting. It was beautiful. It was mournful. But that's what I thought that Shabbat before Tisha B'Av was supposed to be. I come to Shul, I dive in the breast of Shul, no trace. And today I actually looked at, okay, it's not their custom, I understand. If I would ask you, based on what we said before, would it be permitted to sing a mournful Tisha B'Av tune to Lechad Odi? You would apply the halacha that we just said. What was the halacha we just said? The halacha was no outward observance of mourning on Shabbat, just like a mourner who sits Shiva, so too with the remembering the Beit HaMikdash, no outward observances. So that was the custom. Now, so it's kind of the exception to the rule. The general halacha would be you would not sing L'chad Odi to that tune. I saw something I saw this morning in early, very authoritative commentary who writes that one should not sing L'chad Odi to a mournful tune. And he said over the following story, I believe this story 100%, but it's not the kind of story you usually hear in a halacha class, but it's written in a halachic source. There was once a certain house in the village which had, my sister sometimes has a problem of raccoons in her attic. She lives in New England, she lives in Boston, an old house. There's raccoons in the attic. It's a big problem. You know, they're getting in, the squirrels. Well, this house didn't have raccoons. It didn't have squirrels. Maybe here in Tzfat we have pigeons. Well, you know what they had? They had shadim. They had demons in their attic. Yeah. You know, who are you going to call, right? So.
Oh, busters.
So they it got to the point where they had to leave their house. There was nothing that could be done. You know, the house was closed off. And this rabbi, this halachic authority, said that he walked by the house during the week. And he could hear the commotion coming from upstairs. And you know what these demons were singing? They were singing, L'chad Odi L'kras Kala P'nei Shabbos. Meaning, this is basic on a Kabbalistic insight that what he understood was that they love it when we take away our simcha on Shabbos. They love it when we bring Tisha B'Av into Kabbalah Shabbos and sing the Lechad Odi like we sing Eli Tzion. That's where they get their fuel, as it were. That's where they're nurtured from things like that. It's as it were giving over our holy Shabbos. Happiness is the realm of holiness. Sadness is the other side. So when we bring sadness into our Shabbos, is that where gives them strength. And so that's when he realized, stay away from this custom. So I will no longer hum that tune under my breath this Friday night, number one. There were other customs of mourning on the Shabbat, and one of them also has to do with tunes. And that is, isn't it so interesting that we always read Parshat Devarim? Parshat Devarim, the first parsha in Sefer Devarim, is always read the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. And isn't it interesting that in the first Aliyah, there's a pasuk, there's not many psukim, and maybe only one, maybe only one in the whole Torah, I'd have to check it out, that begin with the word Eicha. Eicha, as we know, is the title of the Megillah of Lamentations, Megillah's Eicha. It's the Megillah we read, you know, how could it be that the city which was so populous became so desolate, right? Eicha, how could it be? So Moshe Rabbeinu, in the beginning of his speech in Sefer Devarim, says, Eicha, Esau Levadi. I said at the time, says Moshe, how could I bear you? You guys are so bothersome and toilsome and heavy on me. You're always complaining, Moshe says to Am Yisrael. And I said to Hashem, Eicha Esau Levadi, how can I bear the weight of the Jewish people on my shoulders by myself? So there's a custom, maybe you've seen it, that the Baal Kore, the one who's reading, uses the trup, uses the cantillations. He reads it in the nigun with the tune of Tisha B'Av, in the middle of reading the Torah, which of course has a different trup, has different ta'amim. Rochelle, answer is yes. Yes, if they keep their social distancing. Okay. Now, so this also was a common practice, but that is not the custom in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, it's much more the custom. And the same is true of the Haftarah. The Haftarah, again, as I mentioned earlier, is somewhat apocalyptic, where Yeshayahu is foretelling the downfall of Jerusalem. So there also people often had the custom of reading those psukim like Eicha, but the general principle is we do not have public displays of mourning on Shabbat. So how could it be? So now let me share my screen and share with you the Shulchan Aruch. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Shaparaya, says the Shulchan Aruch, in the very first halacha, about the 3 weeks and the 9 days, okay, look at this. Look at this. I'm reading to you from the Shulchan Aruch, right? He says, when enters the month of Av, we reduce joy. A Jewish person asks with a legal dispute, the Gentile should delay it because it's bad mazel. Says the Ramah. It's important to know who the Ramah is. Rabbi Moshe Isserles, we've talked about this many times. He's the Ashkenazic counterpoint of the Shulchan Aruch. It has the same authority as the Shulchan Aruch, but he brings the Ashkenazi tradition, which is as the same binding nature as the Shulchan Aruch does for all of us and for the Sfaradim in particular. So there's the Ramah. Besides for this, it is forbidden even on Shabbat Chazon, which is of course the Shabbat prior to Tisha B'Av. We do not switch to wear Shabbos clothes except for undergarments. Meaning, you come to Shul on this Shabbos, and you come with your Shabbos clothes, and you come to the Ramah Shul in Krakow, and you're like, you feel like you're a chassan at a funeral. You feel like you're dressed up, and everyone there is wearing chol clothes. It's like a breslov wedding. At breslov weddings, I don't know why this is. In America, you get dressed up to go to a wedding. Breslov weddings, you come in your whole clothes, you wear your regular clothes. If you're part of the wedding party, so if you come wearing your Shabbos clothes, they think, oh, you're from the chassan side. But you come into a shul, the Ramah shul, you would expect people to be wearing their whole clothes on Shabbos, their weekday clothes. And this is the custom brought by all the Rishonim, the early authorities of Ashkenaz, the Mordechai, the Maril, the Aguda, the Rokeach, the forefathers, the founding fathers of Ashkenazi custom, is that on this Shabbos, we don't wear Shabbos clothes. And except for the undergarments, because they have no kavod, they have no dignity about them. They're technical, as it were. But the outer clothes are whole. Have you ever seen anyone practice this? Have you ever seen any shul where this is conducted? Anyone? I don't think so. So that's what I said. When I today tell you the halacha, you don't have to be worried about, I'm going to have to start changing something. I'm not changing anything. In fact, you are changing something. You're changing your clothes. You're changing into your Shabbos clothes. The Ramah says, don't change your clothes this Shabbos. Keep your clothes, your whole clothes. And we know, let's just make this a little stronger at this point. Not only, as we said earlier, that on Shabbat it's prohibited to have outward public display of mourning and sadness, but we know that wearing Shabbos clothes is a special mitzvah of Shabbos. Just like there's special food for Shabbos, there's a special mitzvah which the Gemara and Masechet Shabbos learns out from a pasuk, from a verse in Yeshayahu, that the way we're mechabed Shabbos, we respect and dignify the Shabbat, is by having special clothes, that we don't have the same clothes for Shabbos as we have during the week. So here it is, we're kind of suspending a halacha. So you know, this is a very, very, I would say, puzzling halacha, but it was definitely the practice in many, many, many Ashkenazi, certainly Yekki communities, that they wore chol clothes on Shabbos. Now, so I came across this halacha this week from an intriguing responsa, a shaila. Everyone knows what a shaila is, right? A shaila is a question asked in the shailas v'tshuvos, in the responsa literature. I just took off the shelf the other day this book. It looks like it's backwards. Is it like the Hebrew backwards for you also? It's the Shailas v'tshuvos Rivivos Ephraim. It's a book of questions and answers, responsa, from my Rebbe from early childhood, Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt. And he always has these really, really interesting questions. And I opened it up, and here's the question he was asked. He was asked as follows. Apropos Rochelle and flying, so there was this community, this group of people who, you know, the 9 days always falls out during summer vacation. And it always, you know, forget Shabbos, it always kind of, there's this tug of war, 9 days, but it's summer vacation, we want to have fun, we want to travel. So this group, this community would travel, but where would they travel? They would go to Poland, during post-war. They would go to Poland and, you know, see the communities and see the camps. That's what they would do every Tisha B'Av, every 9 days. That's where they would go. And the question is, often on Shabbat, before Tisha B'Av, they would spend Shabbat in Krakow, in Poland, and they would daven in the Ramaz Shul, in the Shul of Rabbi Moshe Isserles, the authority who just told us that you're not allowed to wear Shabbos clothes. And the custom, overwhelming custom of communities, you know, 95, if not 99% of all communities today, is to wear Shabbos clothes. So they asked the rabbi, we're going to the Ramaz Shul, you know, is it chutzpah? Do we have to respect his custom, his ruling, and refrain from wearing Shabbos clothes if on this Shabbos we're in his turf, as it were, we're in his territory? So that was the question that was asked. I thought it was a very interesting question. And so he goes through the whole thing here. Why, what is the custom? Why is it the custom? Why is it not the custom? That, why do we not follow this? So there seems to be a couple of very interesting points. And I think we see here a couple things that we can learn about how halacha works. First of all, the Ramah brings it, but you learn something very important about halacha. Just because something is written in Shulchan Aruch, you know, a newcomer to halacha, he's reading the Shulchan Aruch, he comes and says, you guys are all wrong, it says here black and white, I see, you know. We don't just get halacha from the Shulchan Aruch. First of all, if you see that all the communities are wearing Shabbos clothes, so you can't come there and, you know, make a protest, a hafganah. They're like, you're going against the Shulchan, you're going against the halacha, we're Ashkenazim, we follow the Ramah. You have to be humble and say, wait a second, there must be a reason if the overwhelming majority of people are not following this custom. So there are a number of explanations. First of all, there are dissenting opinions. There are dissenting opinions. The Ramah is not the only opinion. There are other opinions. There are many authorities who say that not only... Let me ask you guys a question. Is this Ramah, is it a chumrah or is it a kula? Is it a leniency or is it a severity? Is he being strict with us or is he being lenient with us? What do you say?
He probably thinks of it as a stricture.
He's being right. He thinks it's the stricture. What will be the stricture? What's my chumrah? Why am I being? What's my stringency?
That you don't get to dress up.
Right. He's saying, you know, the 9 days are so strict. The 9 days you can't buy things. The 9 days you can't go swimming. You can't wear laundered clothes. You can't buy new clothes. Even on the Shabbos of the before Tisha B'Av, you have to be strict and not even change into your Shabbos clothes. You have to stay with your 9 days clothes, right? That's how you would phrase it as a stricture. He's being very machmir, stringent in the halachot of the 9 days. However, Alana, can you say it the other way? Maybe it's a leniency.
But Rabbi, also, like the Torah, it said, you know, Hashem blessed Shabbos. And that's right. For the day for sure. So this is the main thing. Torah is the source. So this this is the second opinion. It's leniency and it's not the main.
It's a leniency, right. That's wonderful halakhic thinking. Sometimes it's so easy to think something is a leniency or a stringency. You have to look at it. This, on one end, it's a stricture, a stringency in the halachot of the 9 days. But Tzipora, you'll agree that this is being very lenient in the halachas of Shabbos. We just said Shabbos is a happy day. Shabbos is a day where you have to wear nice, dignified, clean, new clothing, nice clothing. So it's never a zero-sum game. In other words, if you're being strict on Tisha B'Av, you're being lenient on Shabbos. So there were other opinions. Actually, I'm thinking of it now. Both of them emanating from Tzfat. Three opinions, all coming from here, our hometown, which disagreed. One is the Shulchan Aruch himself, Rabbi Yosef Karo. This is in the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch explicitly says that this is not our custom. Number two, the Radbaz, Rabbi David ben Zimra, who was on the Beis Din. He was one of the three judges on the Beis on Rabbi Yosef Karo's Beis Din here. You know, the cave over there, Rabbi Yosef Karo here in the Old City. That was where the court, the rabbinical court of the Beis Yosef was. And Rabbi David ben Zimra was one of the three rabbinic judges there. He said, because what we said, if someone be sitting Shiva on a relative, right? That's at least as jarring and as mournful as the Beis HaMikdash. And yet the mourner goes to shul. The mourner wears nice Shabbos clothing. So how could this be any different? Just like there, you're not allowed to mourn publicly. So here also you're not allowed to mourn publicly, right? And that's the second Tzfat rabbinic opinion. The third rabbinic opinion is from the Ari HaKadosh. The Ari HaKadosh, and you understand, I think it comes from the idea that the Ari, from a Kabbalistic point of view, understands what Shabbos is really all about, how high Shabbos is, how Shabbos is not just, another day. It's just like a different world, an elevated world, where it's not in the regular linear sequence of days. And therefore, even though yesterday you were wearing old clothes, unlaundered clothes, and Saturday night you're wearing unlaundered not so clean clothes. But Shabbos is not part of that sequence. There's no problem with Shabbos being out of that box. So basically on the Ari, we don't follow this. Now, that's not the custom. But I did find a couple of very interesting ideas about this custom. I'll share with you two of them. One of them is, first of all, if you would ask me, my own personal opinion would be that if there was a custom, are any of you Yekis, from Germany, Austria, Holland?
Yeah.
Lana, you?
My mother was from Austria.
Right. So that many of the Yekim they guard their halacha, their minhagim, their customs, so strongly, and it's beautiful. I love when people preserve their customs, even if they're not mainstream customs. So if you would find a shul where everyone is showing up like the Ramah, I don't think we should come the opposite and say, hey, that's not the custom. You shouldn't be following the Ramah, right? General normative practice is to wear Shabbos clothes. If someone's asking me, I'd say wear Shabbos clothes. But if someone has that custom, then I don't know if they should go to a shul where everyone else, but if it was a whole community or a whole shul, I would say keep your custom. It's a beautiful custom. The Aruch HaShulchan, who was in Greater Lithuania about 100 years ago, he observes the following. He was Lithuanian. He was part of this Ashkenazi practice. He observed, Biyameinu kim'at nishkach hadavar. This idea of wearing weekday clothes on Shabbat, the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av, has been forgotten. Not only do we not do it, if you would tell someone that this halacha exists, even a learned person, they, what are you talking about? Apparently in the earlier generations, 200, 300, 400 years ago, that was the custom in Europe. But by the 19th century, even in Ashkenazi Europe, that was not the custom. And he has a whole discussion, which I think this is very interesting, about how you guys know this, and here's an example of it, how changing practice, changing social norms can sometimes affect the halacha. How does that work? Because, says the Aruch HaShulchan, in the olden days, people's Shabbos clothes were not so different than their weekday clothes. All right, I'm a Breslov Chassid. Now, if you see me during the week and you see me on Shabbos, you'll know it's Shabbos, right? At least I'm not necessarily always this way, but most people in my community on Shabbos wear a gold kaftan, like the Yerushalmi striped gold long coat. You've seen that, right? You live in Tzfat, you know what that is. And a shtreimel, okay? That's very different than the weekday clothes, right? Of, you know, what they call penguin. You know, I kid you not, I'll tell you a funny story. This is my joke for the day. Before I lived in Tzfat, brought a group of kids from my moshav for Shabbos in Tzfat. Kids, you know, they were somewhere between modern Orthodox and secular, and they came here to Breslov for Shabbos, and they had a great time. And Motzei Shabbos, we were walking down by the cemetery, and I saw that my kids, who could be a little tough, went up to some of the Hasidic kids, and I saw they were exchanging words between them. So I ran over to them and, you know, took my kids back with me. I don't mean my own kids, I mean my students. And I said to the Hasidic children, I said, you know, did they insult you? Did they, you know, were they, you know, I hope they didn't disturb you in any way. You know, they said, no. I didn't even understand what they were saying. Rabbi, what's a penguin? So anyway, coming back, the it's a true story. So, you know, during the week is black and white. You should know a pi-Kabbalah, one should not wear black on Shabbos. It says explicitly in the Kabbalah that one should not. That's like the day that all the Haredim wear black, right? The women and men. But it says in the Kabbalah one should not wear black on Shabbos because black is mourning. Apropos, here's a little interesting fact. You know why we call it Saturday, right? We don't call it Saturday. Why they call it Saturday? Because every day of the week is connected to one of the celestial bodies. Saturday, of course, is after the planet
Saturn.
Saturn is the, Roman, right? Not Greek, Roman. Roman god of sadness, of depression. Saturnine, if you remember from the Alter Heim, from the old days when we had a English vocabulary, Saturnine is depressing, depressed, right? Saturnine. So Shabbos in pagan times was a day of depression. Pagans would wear black on Saturday because they were under the influence of Saturn. Jews are happy on Shabbos, okay? Says
we wear white like the moon.
What? Right. You know, in Tzfat, they'd wear white.
Like the moon.
Like the moon. Right. Maybe on Monday.
Every symbol.
Today is Monday. So today, you know, by the pagans, is Moon Day. So maybe they wore white on Mondays. But we wear white on Shabbos because Shabbos is the sphere of the moon. It's Shechina, not for now. Says the Aruch HaShulchan beautiful. He says, in the old days, the difference between Shabbos clothes and weekday clothes was not so distinguished. Picture like, you know, American Orthodox, American modern Orthodox, okay? New York Orthodox. So I used to go to my uncle for Shabbos often. So he's a lawyer. So during the week, I would see him go just to work. What does he wear to work? He wears a suit and a tie. He comes to shul. What does he wear on Shabbos? A suit and a tie. Is there any, to the naked eye, to the outside eye, can you discern the difference between the Shabbos suit and the weekday suit? I know that he knows the difference. You know, he knows what brand it is, what style it is, but it's a suit is a suit. There's not much difference. You know, it's like my kids ask me, you know, Abba, why do you wear a Shabbos shirt a week? And how do you know? This is not a Shabbos shirt. I know what all my shirts are white shirts, but I know I have Shabbos white shirts and I have weekday white shirts. So the outside has no idea what the difference is. It's not so discernible. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, in the old days, their norm, their social fashion, if you will, was that their Shabbos clothes and their weekday clothes were not so different. So when I told you to wear your weekday clothes on Shabbos, it wasn't like, oh my God, what happened? Who died when you come to shul? you couldn't really, if there would be a show full of lawyers and they're all wearing their Friday suits on Shabbos, you couldn't tell the difference. So it wasn't such a big deal. It wasn't considered practicing Avelut, publicly flaunting mourning on Shabbat. But nowadays, where our Shabbos clothes are so different from our weekday clothes, certainly a Hasidim, but, you know, especially in Israel, certainly also where, you know, it's a lot more dressed. You know, I guess it really depends. Even in America now, it's, you know, very, very, work is very dressed down and Shabbos is more dressed up. You know, if you're wearing a shirt with a collar, that's already a Shabbos clothes, whatever it is. But it really depends on social norms. When there's a polar difference between the Shabbos and the weekday, so the Orach HaShulchan says, we wear Shabbos because otherwise it would be so egregious and so blatant that we're mourning on Shabbos. But if there's not much of a difference, so there's room to be lenient, quote unquote, and wear that weekday suit, that weekday shirt into Shabbos. Again, that's not. I'm not saying that you should start. If your Shabbos clothes are not much different than your weekday clothes, then I'm not saying that you should adopt this halacha. But I'm saying this to understand how it could be that 200 years ago that was the norm in Europe. So here's another way that halacha works. Based on the changing fashion, that also influences the halachic customs. That's point number one. I've included point number two, which I think is a nice thought to end on. The Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer was what we say in Hebrew, in Yeshivish, the Rosh Kibahag. He was the Rosh Kol B'nei Agola. He was the rabbinic authority. He was the last word in terms of halacha in the early 19th century in Europe, certainly for the Central Europe in that community, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And he would wear weekday clothes on Shabbos. And I assume his weekday clothes were different than his Shabbos clothes. He would wear weekday clothes on Shabbos. Some of his Talmidim come to him, his students come to him and say, Rebbe, why are you wearing weekday clothes on Shabbos? Haray the Ari HaKadosh from Tzfas, the holy Arizal, he said that we have to wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. It's public mourning. Oh, Shalom Aleichem. I have to show you. Come. Shalom Aleichem. If this is anything, look at this for one second. אני בדיוק מדבר על אנשים שלובשים בגדי לבן. אני הרגע מדבר פה, אני יכול להראות לתלמידים שיש יהודים שלובשים, אני יכול להראות? כן? תסתכלו, he hasn't walked into my house since Erev Pesach. Comes into my house right now. Look at that, we're talking about Shabbos clothes. אתה לובש גם בשבס אותו דבר או יש לך שבס אחר? כל השבוע שבס.
בשבס יש אחר.
בשבס יש אחר אבל לבן. בדיוק מדברים על הרי הקדוש ובגדי שבת. אני באמת שאני יכול לעזור לך משהו אחרי זה, עוד שתי דקות. How's that? Only in Tzfat, right? Okay, so they asked the Chasam Sofer, why are you wearing chol clothes, weekday clothes on Shabbos? Didn't the Ari already teach us that that's not our custom? So he said as follows. He said, the Ari was on such a high level that he could wear Shabbos clothes, fancy, regal Shabbos clothes, and still have in his consciousness, still be mindful that we're right before Tisha B'Av, and still be aware of the destruction of the temple. It didn't take him out of the mood. It didn't break his train of thought. But someone like me, I'm not on that level. If I'd wear my regal Shabbos clothes, I'm already, you know, you put on the clothes, you already, you know, you put on your dancing shoes, you want to dance. You put on your Shabbos clothes, you're already totally in a festive mode, and you're not gonna be focused in on the seriousness, on the, I don't know about mourning, but at least the mindfulness about Tisha B'Av. That's how he explained it. So says the person telling over this story, he said, so from here I want to learn out the opposite. Try to follow along. He says, we, even if we'd wear weekday clothes, we still wouldn't be able to connect and concentrate on Tisha B'Av. We're even further than the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer said, if I wear Shabbos clothes, I'm going to be out of Tisha B'Av mindset. If I wear weekday clothes, I'll be in Tisha B'Av mindset. But we're so far away from the morning that even if we wear Tisha B'Av clothes on Shabbos, it ain't going to help us. We're still going to be disconnected from it. So we may as well wear Shabbos clothes because it's not going to help us in any way. It won't even help us to wear Big Day Chol. And therefore, we should keep the halacha of Shabbos, the original halacha of being dignifying and respecting the Shabbos with our Shabbos clothes. Was that last point clear?
Yes.
Right. So again, that wasn't necessarily the halachic point, but it was a point about how difficult it is, recognizing how difficult it is for us to have in mind Tisha B'Av. And he says that halavai, would it be the case that on Tisha B'Av we kept in mind Tisha B'Av? In other words, we're not holding on that level right now on Shabbos, having in mind also Tisha B'Av and also Shabbos. Let's be realistic with where we are. And the Tisha B'Av, halavai Tisha B'Av should be Tisha B'Av, and let Shabbos be Shabbos. So that's the outcome of this discussion. So Bezrat Hashem, we should hear good news. Questions?
But Rabbi, if you can make like Shabbos close and Tisha B'Av Jewish, I thought like, you know, the temple will be rebuilt. Then we will be like in a mourning mood, but it's a joyous mood. What happened, you know, it will be rebuilt and Mashiach is coming. Can we do that or not?
On Tisha B'Av itself?
Yes. No, Shabbos, on Shabbos.
On Shabbos, you can get ready for Mashiach. You can wear your Mashiach clothes on Shabbos. You know, yes. That some people had special clothes for Mashiach, right? On Shabbos, you can wear your Mashiach clothes.
Yeah,
and it's fine, you'll fit right in.
If you're only going to a reading of Echa by Zoom, do you have to get dressed at all? Never mind Shabbos clothes.
No, you do not. You know,
I'm not about Shabbos because Hashem blessed the Shabbos. And by blessing
Shabbos, we have Shabbos, we have Tisha B'Av. We know how to shift modes. We know how to shift modes. Okay. Oh, so I didn't see Rochelle had asked that question about good question, Rochelle. I hear your question. This is a very important point. Since we're not going out to synagogue this Shabbat, does it matter what we wear? Absolutely. You don't get dressed in Shabbos clothes because of it's not the, what do they call it, the fashion parade in the over there. It's not for shul, it's not for your guests. You're having guests, you're not having guests, it's for the Shabbos queen. You have a visitor, you have a beautiful, important, holy visitor, and you're getting dressed for her, the Shabbos queen. Okay, but back to Rolana, but for Zoom on Tisha B'Av, so, you can go barefoot, you don't have to wear Crocs. Okay, Bezrat Hashem, we'll speak next week. Next week, we're going to do a little preparation for Tisha B'Av, and actually, I understand we're going to be studying together on Tisha B'Av itself, not halacha, but something connected to the keynote, to the prayers of the day. Okay, be well, everybody. Kol Tov.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shalom. Bye bye.